Oh, it's lovely. I haven't heard that before. Where'd that come from? Huh. You know what? We should have a Not Michael Gott talent show this coming Friday. I'm just saying. All right, before I do anything else, I'm going to take our affirmation and put it on the corner. I might need some taller help. The affirmation for the week, taken out of the Neville book that we're studying together. I begin by seeing the end that I desire. Wait a minute, it'll be easier. Oh! I begin by seeing the end that I desire. Thinking from the end, I activate creative principle and confidently know my desires are already fulfilled. I partnered with such a tall man, I'm not used to having to reach much. He does all that for me. Good morning! I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm the senior minister of this community, and I'm really excited. I'm feeling well supported. I feel like we're walking into Stewardship Month at such a gorgeous time. And get a load of this. This is really cool. The title of the talk this morning is Every Piece Matters, and your visioning committee did a series of visionings where we took the themes that came up while we were just open to God's highest vision, and we got puzzle pieces. You know, more than one of us, and we saw this idea of wholeness, and so we worked diligently over several meetings and created this theme. We came up, we had a vision of what this would look like, and then be sure you see the gorgeous collage framed picture of our center out there where we're going to have the puzzle being built on the table in front of it all month. And then, lo and behold, I sit down and, you know, every month I attempt to tie in the theme that Centers for Spiritual Living is following all around the world. More than 100 of our centers are following this theme. Next year it'll be even more. We'll have a new theme. But guess what the theme for this month was? Wholeness. Every piece matters. And for me, the entire idea of every piece matters is wholeness. And here's what's exciting about all of this. Wholeness is a primary teaching in most faiths, in most spiritual religions, though we call it by different things. And in this particular teaching, the science of mind or religious science, wholeness is one of our 10 core concepts. It is a key teaching. And so my purpose this morning, our objective this morning, will be to have you be more clear about what that means. What do we mean when we are spiritually speaking to the idea of wholeness? Which, by the way, we teach that in night 4 in the foundation class. But I also want us to see the way in which we are always a part of the whole, and then we're going to expand that this morning by talking about the way we are also a piece of the whole of the community, and we'll talk about the community and wholeness as well. So to start me off, I found this, you know, I always love a quote to inspire me. Haven't we heard some good quotes already this morning? Really love the way the theme comes together and even the choices of music are fabulous. But the quote I am excited about this morning comes from Julia Cameron. And Julia Cameron in the late 80s or early 90s wrote that fabulous book called The Artist's Way. And my life changed. I studied that book with my sister. It's a 13-week kind of built-in course. And my sister had moved to Chicago, and it was the way we met on the phone once a week to talk about the week's study. And what the gift of that book book is that it gets you in the habit of journaling, of writing on a daily basis, and it also encourages that we treat ourselves to what Julia Cameron calls artist dates, where you take yourself out somewhere fun and you go alone to sort of rediscover the desires of your heart, and you get to be real creative in the way you plan all that. So anyhow, I love this woman, and I want you to hear these really gorgeous words that come from Julia Cameron. We all start out the same way, rich in dreams. If we are lucky, we find friends to believe in our dreams with us. And when we do that, then that creative cluster becomes a magnet to attract our good. What a lovely term. When you find that place where you're with other people and you support each other by nurturing those dreams and those desires, that we create a creative cluster that becomes like a magnet that attracts more good to us. See, that's the beauty and the glory of doing things as a community, where we get on that same wavelength, where we're all looking at a similar theme. So we come to learn that every piece matters, that we are blessed by the company of each other. I feel especially grateful that I have, in my own life, found a spiritual path that nurtures the growth of my own being, that we believe in the way that our life is infinite and we are forever and ever expanding in what's possible for us, even in our daily living. And so these are really great blessings, and I believe that we can be grateful for the way that this teaching, the science of mind, absolutely supports, is really grounded in this idea of supporting our dreams and paying attention to our deepest desires. Because what we learn when we study truth in its raw form, like we do here, what we learn is there's this invitation for us to begin to redefine what we believe about the Creator, what we believe about this idea of God or Spirit or the Holy Spirit or whatever you want to call it. That if we can begin to see God as more than a personality, if we can begin to see that God is not a noun, but a verb, that there is this beingness that we then can relate to in a more personal way. We can then begin to see, hopefully, and this is the big goal, we can begin to see the ways in which we are a part of that. That God, as the ground of our being, is a part of who we are, and we cannot separate ourselves from that. And so that's where we begin to look at this idea of what wholeness is. So we're looking at stewardship in the month of November. It is the as Clyde said, it's the only time we look at the idea of financial giving, and we do that in such a way that we are focusing all month long on the well-being of our center and our future, that we are looking at the different ways we can be good stewards. And I found this great definition for stewardship that I hadn't ever seen before. It says, stewardship is utilizing and managing all the resources that God has already given us. See, the gift is already given. We sometimes look at the way we're seeking, but the gift is already given. So in stewardship, we focus as a spiritual community on bringing leadership together with laity. You know who laity is? Is everybody that's not, if you don't identify yourself as a leader here, then you're laity. We would call you that. You're a part of this community. You're a member of the community, whether or not you're a member of the church. So we're putting everybody together, even people that visit and sort of pass through. And then we look at the way we are integrating our faith with our life. See, that's what we do really well. We really are a faith that is about a practical form of spirituality. The way we live our life is really our faith. So we have a spiritual practice that you may consider the way you pray in the morning or the way you take time to meditate. But our spiritual practice is really how we practice in our everyday living. So that if you take a wrong turn somewhere, you know that you simply have to turn around, that we get a do-over, that we get to try it again, and that life is always that way. We're sort of course correcting. I like to think of it like that. So let me take you back for a minute to the idea of stewardship. Stewardship typically means the way that we are showing up to be responsible for something. But when I look at that idea that we are looking at the resources that have already been given to us, then I see that we are really talking about this message of wholeness. So stewardship now becomes the way we are a part of that greater whole, the way we are individually a piece of the puzzle. That's why I think it's going to be so powerful for you to hold a piece of that puzzle while you pray or meditate or say a mantra or bless the center or bless your own life or bless the loved ones in your life that you have concern for. The message of wholeness is that age-old wisdom that says, so you got a seed, but whatever that seed is, it already holds the completed potential of whatever it's going to be. So in the seed, you have the tree, or you have the plant, or the flower, you have, or a weed, you know? It doesn't matter what it is. In the seed, there is the reality of what the seed produces that is pre-existent. We don't disagree with that. We tend to understand that. Many of us have planted gardens, have grown vegetables, and made our own food, and or planted beautiful flower gardens, or tried to, in my case. And so we get that. It's a logical way that nature shows us how life works. But get a load of this. Think about this for a minute. Within the human individual, now, we say we are individualized expressions of the whole. So within the individual, that's me, that's you, that's every living being, there is already that same completed potential for all of the divine qualities. So all the love you desire, all the peace you desire, the joy, the harmony, the light, the truth, the beauty, everything is already God-given because we are created in the image and likeness of God, and we come from that. That is what created us, who and what created us. And so as we begin to play with these ideas, we can begin to form a greater impression of what wholeness means and how to participate it, how to perceive it in a new way. It is that self-existent potential that's already in us. So no wonder we desire good things in our life. No wonder we really don't like negativity, because we have something else within us that is always sort of calling forward to be pulled out of us, to be expressed in our livingness. And so the gift of community then is the way we come together to nurture that reality, to help birth that reality, not only for us as individuals, but again for us as a community. So in many ways, you could say that the art of learning to live your life, spiritually speaking, is learning that we are an extension of God, that we say sometimes there is only one mind. That mind is the mind of God, and my mind is one with that mind now. That's what our great founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, used to say in his own prayer work. So our individual minds are a part of that one mind, and there's no way of getting around it. So we use that beautiful illustration of a drop of water. If you took a drop of water out of the ocean, you know, if we went over and we just took a spoonful of water, or got a little cup, and then we took a little dropper, and we took a drop of water from the ocean, and you had all the equipment, say you had a great laboratory at home, or access to a great laboratory, and you analyzed it in great detail, you would find that the composition of the water will be exactly the same as the ocean. They cannot be different because they are one and the same. The drop of water is not separate. It's just showing up as an individualized expression of the whole. And so you have a little drop of that greater truth. And that's what we are. We're like little drops of truth. You know, that we come and we're born and we live in these bodies, and that all of that divine DNA exists in us. So all the good that we desire pre-exists, and it is in this idea of wholeness that we are sometimes we say there's nothing to be healed, there's only truth to be revealed. And so when I'm praying for some kind of a physical healing, I'm praying that I will wake up and remember the truth of my being so that I can be restored to that wholeness. And it starts first in our thoughts. That's why it's so useful for us to be reading Neville right now as a group of people, for us to be collectively joining our consciousness around this idea of the works of Neville. Now, Neville lived from 1905 to 1972, so he was a contemporary of Dr. Holmes. They lived about the same time. I'd love to know if they knew each other and what kind of, would be fun to eavesdrop on those conversations. And Neville is so aligned to the methodology of the science of mind that Neville was a really good choice for our reading. Neville has this same understanding that intelligence lives in us. And it is indeed why our bodies know how to breathe, and why our bodies know how to heal, and why our hearts yearn to love and to have connection. It's that pre-existent state that we really are. If we're created in the image and likeness of God, we have to be lovable and capable of loving. It's a genetic. Genetically mandatory that has to be in us. So we are some part of the whole, but we're left alone to figure that all out. And so there are a lot of days where we don't feel so loving or so lovable. But Neville brings us one important message. And if you don't get anything else out of, which by the way, if you read any part of that book, I promise you, you will get something out of it, because it's just such a beautiful voice. And it's a good read. But if you don't get anything else out of Neville, I'm going to tell you what the most important thing we need to learn from Neville is. And that's the way he sort of preaches that in order to manifest any of those good things we desire in our lives, the way to do that is to be conscious and to see the end in the beginning. Now, we're going to talk about this so that nobody leaves here today, unless you go to sleep, then you're on your own. Nobody has to leave here today without fully understanding this. Neville says, the future must become the present in the imagination of the one who would wisely and consciously create circumstances. The future, by the way, this is found in, I believe, this second chapter. Our goal is to read two chapters every week. There's 8 chapters in the book. And so this week, I'm speaking from chapters 1 and 2. And then tomorrow at noon here at the center, and then again at 6 p.m. here at the center, you'll have an opportunity, if you so choose, to sit with a group and have a discussion around this stuff. But Neville is saying the future has to become the present if we start in our imagination. If we so consciously and wisely, he says, choose that, we then begin to create the circumstances in our life. In other words, if we think, If we use our imagination in this holy, God-given way that was intended to be used, the way we tap into the divine imagination, I like to say, if we can think it, if we can create the image of whatever it is that we desire, if we can picture it in our minds, then there's something else that happens. We call it spiritual law that works on our behalf to then be that create, like the congealing factor in creating better circumstances in our life. So we live from this place of cause and effect, and if we don't like the way our life looks, we're not going to be moving. You could move furniture around until the cows come home, and you're not going to be happy until you go back and plant a new seed, a new potential, a new possibility. And as much as you can imagine that that can really outpicture in your life, the more real it is to you, the more the probability of it showing up in your life. Well, actually, it's not even a probability. If you do this well, it must show up in your life, and that's that. We're the only probability factor in there. As much as we can imagine, is what they always say. So we are consciously creating circumstances. Now, again, I want to pull you into the group perspective and see that as we empower what's possible in our thinking and we begin to think collectively, just in the little snippet that Reverend Clyde did before the service, we start taking little pieces of that. We sit together and read this Neville book, The Awakened Imagination, and there are a few copies left. They're only $5.95. I don't know why. That's the best bargain in town. We should have ordered twice as many, Miss Dora, at that price. We could resell them. Oh, we could double the price and make money on it. But we want you to have the good bargain, too. So it's all about our ability to see the end in the beginning. And I'm going to tell you very specifically what that means. Neville says it's not just about thinking of what you desire. It's not just about thinking about it, because sometimes in our thinking, we're still thinking about wanting that desire. But Neville says, we don't think of it, we think from it. And here is the key. You think from it. So if we want this community to thrive and to continue to expand and grow and be alive and energetic and have the best music and to have the every seat filled and to have to bring in more chairs and we, if that was our vision, then we see that and we believe that and we put ourselves in that vision. Like, how could that make my life better? Think of the new people that we could bring in and the new relationships we could develop. Think about the work we could do in the world with this philosophy if more people practiced it. And then we grow it from there because we see it and we think it and we feel it. Now, Neville calls this the creative living. Neville just called it creative living. What did Ernest Holmes call it? The creative process. Thank you very much. The creative process is what Holmes calls it. That comes from Thomas Troward. And this is pure science of mind. Seeing the end in the beginning is the way Neville states it. But this is pure science of mind. Here's your homework for this week. If there's any question, you want to go home and get out your Science of Mind textbook if you don't have one. I keep a copy out here in the bookstore. You can look it up before you leave. Look at chapter 9. It's short. But look for the key ideas in that chapter. It's a chapter on prayer, and if that excites you, go ahead and read the next chapter, chapter 10, on faith, and you will understand what Neville means. Because this whole idea of seeing the end in the beginning is what we call spiritual mind treatment. It is affirmative prayer. So is it familiar? Yes, it's the same thing. It is another way of looking at what we teach. Now, I'm going to tell you the story of how Neville Goddard came to understand this truth. He didn't make it up. He had a teacher. And so Neville Goddard was born in Barbados, and he had moved to the United States. I believe he was living on the East Coast, and he had a very well-respected spiritual teacher by the name of Abdullah. Abdullah was, a lot of people went to Abdullah for lessons. And one day, Abdullah said to Neville, "So what is it that you want? Let's talk about something you want." And Neville said, "You know what I want? I want to go back to Barbados and visit my family. It's been years. I want to go back and, in fact, I want to spend the winter in Barbados with my family. But I don't have any money. I can't afford to do that. In fact, I don't even have a nickel in my pocket right now." And you know what his teacher said to him? His teacher said, "This is simple. Just imagine yourself in Barbados right now. Imagine it, think it, view it, and let that be your state of consciousness, as if you are actually there." Now, the more you can do that, the teacher is telling him, you know, see yourself there with your family. Imagine what you're wearing. Imagine what the weather is like. Smell the air. See what grows there. Get that emotional feeling around what it's like to be with your family again and have that experience. And he told Neville that he should do that every day. And in fact, that if he created that vision before he went to sleep at night, that would empower it even more. But you got to believe it. It's not about seeing like a postcard picture. It's like seeing an image where you're in it and you feel it and claim it and own it. Neville said this. This was the advice he gave him. Neville's teacher, Abdullah, said this. "Do not concern yourself with the ways and the means of getting there." See how we stop ourselves? We have this great desire for something, and it just feels so unlikely that we will ever achieve it, that we can't quite get over that. We can't see the end in the beginning. But he's giving us good advice here. Do not concern yourself with the ways and the means of getting there. From the state of consciousness of already being there, if occupied by your imagination, it will be devised for you the means that are best suited to realize itself. These are powerful ideas here. So Neville tried it. Neville said that he went to bed and had that image every night. So I'm going to read it to you from the book. And this story is actually in the chapters you're reading this week too. "That night and for several nights thereafter, I fell asleep in the assumption that I was in my father's house in Barbados. Within a month, I received a letter from my brother saying that he had a strong desire to have the family together at Christmas, and he asked me to use the enclosed steamship ticket for Barbados. I sailed 2 days later after I received the letter, and I spent a wonderful winter with my family. This experience has convinced me that it depends on the state from which I view the world, how things present themselves." Now, let me hear a real big amen here. Thank you. It matters what state from which we think from. I want to say to you on a personal note that one of the things that's happened to me in my own life since I began studying this philosophy is that I have experimented and I have learned, I have practiced how to do that, how to see the end in the beginning, how to see from that place where you already are in it, where it is already accomplished, it is already successful. And I would say to you that as I think back in how I learned to do that well, It had a lot to do with my ability to surrender. In my ability to get out of the way and try and figure out how to pull it off. See, we can do that, and those are great accomplishments when we do that, but that's goal setting. That is not spiritual practice. It's not the same thing as getting the vision and the image and using the spiritual law of planting our own seeds and creating our own reality. And the greatest thing I think that we can teach each other is that every desire, like I said at the very top of the message, every desire we have is a God-given desire. We have it because it pre-exists in us. But we get confused and we think it's a thing. We think it's stuff. We think it's that perfect soulmate that will love us and support us and be there forever. Well, that doesn't happen. That never happens in finite form anyhow. So there's a way we can begin to practice this stuff as we acknowledge and notice and receive those, pay attention to those desires, be accountable for them, and then go for the things in life that you want and certainly accomplish some goals and look for meaning and purpose in your life, but look deeper. Look deeper for the divine quality that is trying to be revealed through your experience of living. So it may feel like it's getting a new car, or so you don't have to worry about the mechanical problems that come with your older vehicle or whatever. But it's really the freedom. Think of it in what would it be in godly terms? What would the divine quality be? It would really be the freedom. It would be that way of feeling safe and comfortable in our ability to move about the planet. See, so it doesn't matter whatever your desire is, whether it's a healing, a physical healing, so that you can overcome a health issue or any other kind of way in which we might feel limited or out of touch with something we desire, dig deeper to imagine what that is. And then as you do this work and you put an image in your mind of that as a completed thing, you can be more clear of what quality has this divine urge to come through you, to show up in your life as a part of your inherited experience of living. I think it's, Reverend Pat Campbell says, the book club just did this book. I think that's the way we give God a good time. So this experience that Neville had then from his teacher was realizing that it's a state of consciousness, that it's about thinking from to that experience that you desire. Now, I think I get excited imagining, like, how could we practice that here as a community? Imagine if we tried a great experiment in this way. And as I was playing with that idea and I was getting all excited about it, and then I thought, oh, I don't know, I'm kind of tired. We just had a really big experiment that we just finished, and I realized, voila, we have already done it. We have proved how powerful we are. And it started because a year ago, I want to tell you, a full year ago, a group of one person came forward and she said, it's going to be our 40th anniversary from our charter. 40 years, we need to do something. And then a committee just organically formed around that idea. Yeah, we want to support that. And then for a full year, we talked about it. We played in it. We imagined how great could it be. And we imagined so far beyond what we thought we were capable of doing. And we just stood loyal to the vision. And I want to tell you, there were a few bumps. There were some challenges. There were the times that the committee and myself would sit together and we'd be like looking at each other like, oh, I don't know how we're going to do that. Or we'd hit a wall and it would look like, well, that's not the right direction. But you know what happened every time? Something better was revealed if we couldn't head down the track we were going, and we stayed open to that divine guidance. But we did not let up on imagining, on visioning, on envisioning, on seeing it as a successful, amazing, wonderful event, and it was. It was even better than we could have planned, had we, yeah, not quite over it, but then I thought, not only that, not only did we have a dynamic committee and your entire board of trustees supported the vision, we talked about it. We probably talked about it at every single board meeting. You think we did? At every single board meeting, we spent time in addition to all the committee stuff. But then this other vision started to come forward, that what if a group of people, we have 40 days, September 12th was 40 days before the big event, what if 40 people got together and prayed every day, not together, but if 40 people were praying on a daily basis for the well-being of this community in every way, and what if those 40 people were willing to also give thanks for all the people that came before us. So we started by giving thanks for those who are here, who were sort of the longtime members. So we gave thanks for Dean and Joanne, who apparently have ducked out. Where are you guys? Oh, there they are. That's not your normal place. So we gave thanks for people like Dean and Joanne Henson. We gave thanks for people like Dorothy and John Moore. And we gave thanks for all the former ministers that were here in all those 40 years. We gave thanks for June Darby. We gave thanks for Leonard and Teddy Minks. Wasn't it fun to see Teddy Minks dance? Leonard Minks, Teddy is his wife, right? Yeah. And he was very cute wanting to include her in that because they did co-ministry. We gave thanks for Ruth and Jack Deaton, and we gave thanks for Vitor Papke, and we spent those 40 days in gratitude and imagining the well-being of this community. And then we went even further and we asked for 40 people to make a commitment to give of service for 1 hour. In preparation for that event. And you know what happened? I don't think anybody gave a single hour. I think everybody showed up and gave as many hours as it took to get the task done that they envisioned having complete. And then there were all these new people that showed up, that like Doug Krause and Stephanie Smith and Catherine Marino. I have these people that I didn't hardly know who just came, and I would show up here and drive into my parking space on any day of the week, and there were people sweeping, shoveling rocks and sweeping corners and cleaning and scrubbing and shining and doing everything. And then all of our, oh my goodness, the whole, I tried to make it for the kitchen crew so they didn't have to clean, but then I noticed they even got their hands in spiffing up the kitchen, you know? So, it was just amazing. We had just such a great experience. So for 40 days, we had a group of committed people that pulled off something miraculous. How'd we do that? We held the vision that it was possible. We talked about it. We kept excitement revved up around it. We kept casting the vision again and again. And we believed it was possible. We saw it done. We saw it completed, fulfilled, and successful from the very beginning. We saw the end. We came from the end at the beginning. So, what else would we like to accomplish? What else do you hope to accomplish in your own personal life? As a spiritual community here in the West Valley, what are we here to do? Why are we here? And I always say that a church or a spiritual center has one purpose. And that is the product that we produce, and when we consider ourselves successful, it is that we can see a changed human life. And so what is our why? Our why is because this stuff works. our why is because we're surrounded in literature like this reading of Neville, that we teach a methodology that absolutely assures that as we change our mind, we change our lives. We change our thinking. We transform our lives every time we renew our minds. That's not hard, though it is sort of daily work. But we have a very distinct teaching that encourages growth, that encourages the expansion of consciousness. Because when we stretch consciousness, and when we do that as a community, that spills out into the greater world, and we change lives, and we change the world. And we just do it. You know, I mean, all you have to do is be accountable for yourself. You know, let me try and find the word. we teach that we don't have to proselytize, but we have to do the work. And then people that watch us do the work and see and witness the changing of lives are encouraged because they see it's possible. Peter Senge, who wrote a fabulous leadership book called The Fifth Discipline. He's an American systems scientist from MIT, and he was named one of 24 people in the country that was best known for bringing positive change into the workplace. He has a great impact on community and people working together. He says this, Peter Senge says this, when you ask people about what it is like being part of a great team, the most striking thing they say is the meaningfulness of the experience. When you ask people, the first thing they say, the most striking thing they respond with, he says, is they speak to the idea of the meaningfulness of the experience. People talk about being a part of something larger than they are. People talk about being connected and about being generative. And some people spend the rest of their lives looking to recapture that spirit. Three things he says here. One is about being a part of something greater than we are, something larger than we are. You know, then we only have to do our part. And then we work together, we do much bigger things. But the second thing was that we want that sense of connection. And what was the third thing? About being generative. You know what that means? Think about that. What does it mean to be generative? Well, it means being productive. It means being a part of creating something. There's a term that I saw while I was doing the research around this called generative learning. And you know what generative learning is? I think we should use this term here a lot. This is a good term. Generative learning is taking existing knowledge and mixing it with new ideas and experimenting with it with an open mind. See, we can't do any of it if we don't open our minds. So you take existing knowledge, what do we know? And then you meld that with new ideas, and then you play in that. And that's what we're doing all the time. And the only thing that stops us is that place where we go, oh no, that won't work because, right? That's not an open mind. That's just shutting the door when we block ourselves off from this great, great truth. So as a community, because we just did this magnificent thing, we just proved what we can do. I'm not sure that reception hall has ever looked like that. I've seen pictures of some pretty expensive weddings that were here. I never saw anything look that good. I have never seen this building and the grounds look better than they are right now. And what I know is that as a community, we are sitting on the edge of this fabulous lesson that we just gave ourselves, and that we can take this to the world as we continue to understand the idea of wholeness. That all that goodness that we experienced with this gorgeous event was pre-existing. It was already possible. In the mind of God, it was done the moment we visioned it. And I think furthermore that our teaching, that our organization, Centers for Spiritual Living, and I know I've said this so many times, but it is a part of the vision that I cast regularly, and that's why I say it again and again. And that is, I believe that our organization, our teaching, in that way that we are organized to span the world with this message, that we are poised at a time that has never been more important in the history of time, has never been more important than it is right now to deliver these simple truths. And we are all a part of it. And I don't mean just us. You know, I love that there are all kinds of other organized religions that are starting to speak this same language. So it's not about conversion. It's more about how open can we be so that we as humanity, as the masses of humanity, we as individualized drops in this great sea of divinity can catch, be open to catch the divine vision for what's possible on this planet next. I could not be happier to be alive right now. And I'll tell you, that does not mean that I don't have to do my work every day to get over my fears, because the same things that scare you scare me. But I do my work, and I allow myself to not let that block my vision, to not have any of those little but what if. And I do this work with a full dedication, and I continue to create in my own mind an image of what a world that works for everyone would look like. Dr. Ken Gordon called it engaged spirituality. Engaged spirituality. We're going to use that term. I like it a lot. So I want to close with a quote I found from a woman named Gita Bellin. She says, "The impossible is possible when people align together. When you do things with people, not against people, when you do things with people, the amazing resources of the higher power within are mobilized." My friends, we are a creative cluster, and together we are a powerful force in the world. Never forget, you are a piece of the whole. So let's take a breath. It's a lot to think about. And I'd like to take some time where we turn within and we anchor these possibilities in prayer.